Okay, hi everyone. So today I'm going to be talking about an outbreak of the GR diocese associated with water along a hiking trail in Minnesota in 2014. So on August 21st in 2014, routine surveillance interviews of two GR diocese cases conducted by the Minnesota Department of Health, or MDH, revealed that both cases were part of a group of campers who participated in a week-long hiking trip. Both cases also reported diarrheal illness in at least one other group member, and the next morning an outbreak investigation was initiated. The group hiked along the Superior Hiking Trail, which is about a 300-mile footpath that follows the north shoreline of Lake Superior. And on the left-hand side of the screen is a map of the trail, and it begins in the Duluth, Minnesota area and then runs north to the Canadian border. And the part of the trail highlighted in blue is the section that the campers hiked. Potable water is not available at trail-maintained campsites, which requires that campers use various lakes and streams for their drinking water. Well water may be accessed at one of the eight state parks along the trail. However, well locations are generally not convenient for Superior hiking trail hikers. So here's a map of the route that the campers took, which covered about 50 miles along this middle section of the trail. And they hiked for a week and camped at six trail-maintained campsites. The camp director was contacted, and he provided contact information for the campers and also the camp's health center treatment log from July 21st to August 9th. And epidemiologists interviewed camp attendees to get information about illness history, drinking water sources and treatment methods, and swimming exposures. We defined the case as a camp attendee who hiked along the Superior Hiking Trail and subsequently developed a laboratory-confirmed Giardia infection or diarrhea lasting three or more days. So here's an epidemic curve of the outbreak, and you can see that the hiking trip began on July 14th and ended on July 21st. The campers were back at camp for about a week, and then they returned home on July 27th. The first case became ill 2 days later on the 29th, and illness onsets continued into early August. MDH interviewed 11 of the 15 campers, and three of the four people we weren't able to interview were actually lived outside of the United States, so they were back in their home countries when we started this investigation. And six of those 11, or 54%, met the case definition. And two of the six, the original two cases through routine surveillance, had laboratory-confirmed Giardia infections. The median incubation period from the middle of the trip was 17 days, and the median duration of illness was 7 days for the five cases who were recovered at time of interview. 100% of cases reported diarrhea, 67% reported loss of appetite, 50% reported vomiting, 50% cramps, and 50% weight loss. The campers did report swimming at some of the campsites. However, none of them were significantly associated with illness. Campers reported that all drinking water was obtained from lakes and streams along the trail, so they didn't access any of these wells at state campgrounds. They reported always treating their drinking water, and none reported drinking untreated surface water on this trip. Water was mainly treated with chlorine dioxide treatment drops and occasionally boiled at night. The median amount of time campers reported usually waiting between treating their drinking water with the drops and then consuming it was 30 minutes, and that ranged from 20 minutes to 45 minutes. The length of time waited did not differ significantly between the cases and controls. All of the campers also reported being aware that people can get diarrheal illness from drinking backcountry water. So on the right of the screen is a picture of the package for the treatment drops. The instructions indicate that following the use of the drops, water should stand for 15 minutes, or if very cold and turbid, 30 minutes before drinking. So based on what the campers told us, it appears that they were following the manufacturer's instructions. So a closer look at the package reveals that this product does not actually claim to be effective against waterborne pathogens, just odor-causing bacteria, and it's supposed to help improve water taste. The manufacturer was contacted and reported 4 hours of contact time are necessary to inactivate Giardia cysts, not the 15 to 30 minutes that's on the package. So why would the camp buy this product? If you've ever gone on a multi-day hiking trip, you know that space and weight are at a premium. So you can see from the picture on the right that this product is quite small. That's actually me holding both of the bottles in my hand, taking like a hand selfie at my desk. And the product also has a long shelf life, so the drops in this picture were purchased in the fall of 2014, and they don't expire until January of 2018. The low cost, which is just $15 to treat 30 gallons of water, is also appealing to consumers. So not only is this product small, lightweight, and inexpensive, but it's also frequently marketed as an effective pathogen reduction method for use in the backcountry. So here are just a few examples of how the product is marketed by different national outfitters and also on the manufacturer's website. And these are just a few I pulled. There are many other examples out there. All indicate that the product is effective against waterborne pathogens, and many mention protozoa or Giardia specifically. For example, kills waterborne pathogens better than iodine or chlorine bleach with no strange aftertaste. And chlorine dioxide has been shown to remove greater than 99.9% of bacteria, viruses, cysts, including Cryptosporidium and Giardia. So this clearly sends mixed messages to the consumer. And I think it's also a case of if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So we concluded that this was a waterborne outbreak of giardiasis associated with drinking surface water at multiple points along a hiking trail. A specific water source was not identified to be associated with illness because cases and controls drink from all sources. While the campers followed the package instructions, the treatment appears to have been ineffective at inactivating Giardia in the water. And chlorine dioxide can be an effective pathogen reduction method. However, the product used by the campers is not intended for pathogen reduction, even though it's frequently marketed as such. So as a result of this outbreak, the camp is changing their recommendations on how to properly treat drinking water for this year's group of campers. So this outbreak is not unprecedented. In 2014, an outbreak of giardiasis occurred amongst a group of university students who hiked along this trail. 69 illnesses were reported, and 21 of those were laboratory confirmed. The students reported using iodine drops and tablets to treat their drinking water, which has a low to moderate effectiveness against Giardia. Additionally, MDH began interviewing Giardia cases in 2013 to collect information about illness history and relevant exposures in the 3 weeks prior to illness onset. Since that time, 16 additional cases have reported drinking surface water from lakes and streams in the Lake Superior North Shore area, and 14 of the 16 specifically mentioned hiking along the Superior hiking trail. The pie chart shows a breakdown of water treatment methods used by these campers. 55% reported either not treating their drinking water at all or using some sort of chemical treatment method. An additional 15% reported filtering water, and 25% reported using UV treatment. To gather more detailed information about backcountry exposures, MDH created a supplemental form that is completed whenever a case reports consuming surface water while hiking or camping. The form collects information about hiking and camping dates and locations, drinking water sources and the specific treatment method used, other water exposures like swimming and canoeing, and illness and other group members. So this form has provided us with better information about where backcountry hikers are recreating in our state and what their treatment practices are. In the future, MDH plans to conduct a survey of backcountry hikers to learn more about their knowledge, attitudes, and practices regarding drinking water treatment to to help us create better outreach materials for these individuals. MDH also plans to partner with the Superior Hiking Trail Association, which is the main group that advocated for and built the trail and now maintains and promotes the trail, to provide targeted outreach to hikers to prevent future illnesses. So finally, future drinking water treatment guidance should focus not only on advantages and disadvantages of the different types of treatment methods in general, for example, all types of filtration versus chlorine dioxide in general, but also provide guidance on specific wording that consumers should look for on packages to ensure that the product they're purchasing is intended to be used as it's advertised. Additionally, this outbreak and routine surveillance interviews have demonstrated that Giardia is the biggest threat in Minnesota backcountry water. But this information needs to be better shared with the public to ensure that reliable, science-based information is available to inform their drinking water treatment practices. So I'd like to thank these individuals who helped with this outbreak investigation, and I'm happy to take any questions.
One thing I'll ask you, what is the attack rate among the participants in that hiking event?
Yeah, so 6 of the 11 we interviewed, so that's 54%, met our case definition, so quite high.
And what the other?
So, yeah, 5 of the 6 didn't report any illness.
They used the same methods?
Same methods. We didn't really see any difference in the time that they would wait to treat their drinking water. So it just may be that, you know, these individuals got water that may have had lower amounts in them, or different reasons as to why they weren't infected but others were, but certainly possible.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hi, Jenny from Oregon. Thank you for the interesting presentation. I was you said you're doing some prospective surveillance and collecting all this information. Just curious if you were going to do controls as well, like other backcountry hikers, and see is there one method that's more effective, or is it other practices like where they get their water, you know, running water versus the side of the stream, that kind of stuff? Because it sounds like you've got a neat opportunity too.
Yeah, so we hadn't thought of enrolling kind of control cases, control hikers. But, you know, I have started keeping a line list of all of our cases and where they are, and we had, you know, one thought is maybe there's specific points along the trail where water is more contaminated than other points, and haven't really found that. People generally have been kind of all over, not as many people up in the northern part by Canada, but generally that's a less traveled part of the trail. But yeah, it would be interesting to kind of look and see where people are getting their water, what are their practices, and trying to compare them. But not something we pursued, but sounds very interesting. So thanks.
Hi, Lori Woodburn. I was just wondering, could you expand on what the conversations were like with the manufacturer around the product labeling, and whether there are any potential lawsuits you could comment on?
Yeah, so I didn't call the manufacturer. Tricia, my supervisor, did, and she kind of went rogue and made sure not to call on the office phone, which pops up as like the state of Minnesota calling you, but her cell phone, and just started asking questions about, you know, how effective is this product against Giardia, or what should I do? And I think the guy was pretty nonchalant about the whole thing and said, like, oh, 4 hours. If it was me, I would just, you know, do it, let it sit overnight. And but the other thing I think about this product, and I wish I had taken a screenshot of their website at the time that this happened, but they've subsequently come out with another product, a chlorine dioxide tablet, which is which meets like the EPA purification guidelines, and that one does have a 4-hour contact time. So they've sort of changed their language a little bit around these drops, because I suspect they're trying to promote these tablets, which are more expensive. So yeah, I, and then in terms of like lawsuits or inappropriately labeling. I think it's a little tricky. Their language is pretty broad, and what I suspect that has happened is, if you look at kind of general guidance for treating water, everyone talks about chlorine dioxide in general terms, and that it's generally pretty good. So I think a lot of retailers and people that aren't maybe as informed have claimed on that chlorine dioxide is an effective method, but the time weighted is a huge component when you're using chemical treatment and making sure that that wait time is appropriate. So even though it sounds like it would be good, and this camp, they're informed, the campers are informed, they're trying to do the right thing, but they just got twisted up and ended up picking a product that is kind of being advertised as effective, but really isn't meant to do what it's being advertised to do. So, yeah.
I found the slide of the methods used to decontaminate the water from all your Giardia cases very interesting, including, 15 cases from filtered in water, or reported to have been filtered in. I wonder, when you made that slide, are you sure that were they asked specifically, did they always do this method and never break procedures? Because I go camping a lot, and that's what I do. I'm nervous now.
Yeah. So I should explain the pie chart. So occasionally, we did have some people that said that they filtered all the time. We did have people that would use multiple methods. So they said that they filtered except for one time. They might have used their buddy's chlorine dioxide or something along those lines. So it could be that when they use this other product, that's maybe what it was. There are also people that are doing, the place that you go swimming and potentially like bathing or washing off are the exact same places that you're getting your drinking water. So it could be when they were doing those activities, like swimming, that's when they were exposed. Or people just improperly using products, which I think is probably happening all the time. So,
thank you.
Yeah.